ShareCare, helping you get younger, get guidance, get better care, get smart, get fit. Radio MD presents ShareCare Radio with Daria Long Gillespie, MD.
Hello and welcome to ShareCare Radio. It's Dr. Daria. It's been a busy week for news, so let's keep everybody healthy and let's dive into the stories. The first one was about how what we eat is as important as how we're eating it and in what combination. And that was about consuming eggs with raw vegetables to increase your nutrient value. So this was from research from Purdue University, found that consuming cooked whole eggs with vegetables could increase your carotenoid absorption. Now, what are those? Carotenoids are pigments found primarily in yellow, orange, and red fruits or vegetables. They attach to free radicals, really packaging them so they can be washed out of the body and preventing those free radicals from damaging our cells and chromosomes. So they get that badness out. And the study assessed the effect of consuming eggs with them in a raw mixed vegetable salad. Now, mind you, the eggs were cooked, the vegetables were raw. They looked at about 16 healthy young men who ate three different versions of a salad, one with no egg, one with one and a half scrambled whole eggs, and another with three scrambled whole eggs. Those who ate the highest amount of the salad of tomatoes, shredded carrots, baby spinach, romaine lettuce, and Chinese wolfberry increased absorption of carotenoids by 3 to 9-fold. They talked about how adding certain oils to mixed raw vegetables can help your absorption. And we've seen this in the past, including the combination of spaghetti sauce. The olive oil combined with the tomatoes really can increase your absorption of the good nutrients as well. So that combination, really, there's something to it. The key takeaway is don't go overboard. I'm not saying to eat eggs every time you have raw vegetables, but look at the combination of what you're eating. When you have a raw vegetable, are you having some protein with it? Maybe some good fat as well. And consider adding a cooked egg next time you're eating your salad to increase that absorption of healthy nutrients. Moving from good fats to overall high fats and high not so good fats, and how that affects our brain function. So there's a new study that raises the possibility that a high fat diet produces changes in our health and behavior, in part by changing the mix of bacteria in our gut, known as our gut microbiome. Now, that microbiome consists of trillions of microorganisms, many of which reside in the intestinal tract and are important for our normal functioning of our body. However, research has shown that alterations in our microbiome may underlie our susceptibility to illness, including neuropsychiatric impairment. So this study took adult mice, gave them actually a transplant of microbiome from mice that had been on high-fat diets, and they showed that after the transplant, many of those that were transplanted with high-fat diets had behavioral changes, including increases in anxiety, impaired memory, and even repetitive behaviors. And they also had other unhealthy effects on the body, including increased inflammation overall, which we know is not good. So what's a key takeaway is that high-fat diets may impair our brain health actually by disrupting the microbiome in our gut. So more information that there may be a tie between the two. Next study was interesting, and it talked about the fitness level in men and their later on risk of cancer. So this study was published in JAMA, and it found that men with high fitness levels in midlife appear to be at lower risk for lung and colorectal cancer. And they also have, if they have a higher fitness level, they may have a better chance of survival, even if they are diagnosed with those cancers when they're older. So this research came out of the University of Vermont, and it looked at the association between midlife cardiorespiratory fitness and cancer survival in men after the age of 65. So it was a huge prospective study. They looked at over 14,000 people, and everybody received a fitness evaluation around what they called their midlife, which were late 40s, early 50s, and that included a treadmill test. Then they watched them over years to see the effect on cancer diagnoses and survival. And they found that people who had high fitness in midlife had a 55% lower risk of lung cancer and a 44% lower risk of colorectal cancer compared to men with low fitness levels. For some reason, they didn't find that connection with prostate cancer. So they're still looking into that. But it also could be due to the fact that prostate cancer is so common later on in life in men. So that could be skewing it. But they also found that if you did develop lung, colorectal, or prostate cancer after age 65, men who had a higher fitness level in their 40s and 50s had a 32% lower risk of death. So I know I'm constantly saying that being generally fit helps in more ways than just your heart. But this is really more information and studies that really support that being fit, having higher fitness levels, protect your health in all ways. This next study was on for multiple sclerosis or MS patients. And it was a study from the University of Edinburgh suggesting that MS patients could benefit from treatments that increase the activity in neurons by stimulating the production of the substance that protects their nerve fibers. So they looked at how MS can affect the brain and spinal cord and causes problems with balance, movement, and even your vision. And they showed that treatments to boost brain function from MS patients could actually cause increased production of myelin, or the product that protects the nerve fibers and boost their brain function. Now, this next study for any parent, I know we want to keep things clean. I like to clean my house, bleach, Clorox, whatever it takes to get rid of germs. But this latest study showed that maybe that's not the best idea. So this was research published online in Occupational Environmental Medicine, and it showed that passive exposure to bleach in the home was linked to higher rates of childhood respiratory and other infections. So, you know, what's behind that? They looked at the potential impact of the exposure to bleach on 9,000 children, and then parents were asked to complete questionnaires on infections in their kids, tonsillitis, sinusitis, bronchitis, and then they were asked if they used bleach. And then after the researchers took into account other factors such as smoking and household mold, they showed that the frequency of infections were higher among children whose parents used bleach to clean the home in all three countries. So it was anything from 20 to 35% higher. So what explains this? You know, researchers said, doesn't mean we shouldn't clean our house. We should still try to get rid of those germs. But there may be some irritant properties of that bleach that could irritate children's lining of their lungs, and that could spark inflammation and make it easier for infections to take hold. So what I always try to do whenever I'm cleaning, make sure you aerate the house well, ventilate it really well, so that your child is not exposed and breathing in those fumes, especially after it's just been cleaned, which is my key takeaway of this study. One more study was on PCBs. So this was an international research project, found that the exposure to a chemical pollutant called PCB-153 was associated with cancer in males. Now, what is that? PCBs are polychlorinated biphenyls. Now, these are chemical components, and they're used in industrial equipment and also components in plastics material. Now, they've been banned in many countries, including the U.S., since the 1970s and 80s, but they're still present in the environment and in most people because they don't degrade easily, and so they're often in runoff from industrial areas and other products. So what's the problem is that they, as a result of being involved in this runoff and included in the runoff, they can be found in some fat-rich foods such as large fat-rich fish like tuna, salmon, and swordfish. They analyze accumulated levels of certain pollutants in the body fat of adult men and women, which is where they accumulate. And they found that accumulated exposure was associated with cancer risk, especially in this study in adult men. They thought that maybe it interacts with estrogen and androgen, our hormone receptors, production of free radicals, and possibly even affecting our DNA. So what do you do? Obviously, we can't control the fact that these PCBs exist in the environment, but there are certain things we can do. We do know that high-fat fish do have higher levels of PCBs, but we also know that those high-fat fish are good for us with omega-3s. And so here are a couple things you can do. Opt for wild versus farm raised. When you go for salmon, still good to take that salmon, but opt for wild. The wild is less likely to have PCBs in it or have much lower levels of PCBs because farm raised are often fed food products that have very high PCB levels in them. The other thing is to avoid the skin or the fat underneath it of the fish, and you can peel that off or just limit it to maybe 2 a week. And they also found that among farm-raised fish, the least PCBs were in those from Chile or Washington State. So don't avoid them, but try to avoid PCBs that way and so you can be safe and healthy. And there you have it, the top health news you'll need for this week. For more health news throughout the week, follow me on Twitter at my handle, at Dr. Daria. You're listening to Share Care Radio on Radio MD. Thanks for tuning in and stay well.